Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 56 of the Peristyle Podcast. If you don't know, you can check out the Peristyle Podcast on peristylepodcast.com. It's our weekly internet radio show talking all about the USC Trojans, focusing on the football team. This week, we have a very exciting podcast. By popular demand, if you look on the uscfootball.com message boards, there's always requests to hear from USC strength and conditioning coach Chris Carlisle. We will have him on the show today. We got about a 25-minute interview with him. I think you're going to really enjoy that. We also have Dan Wyke. He's going to be talking about the off-season workouts as the team's heading into spring ball. We are coming to the very end of winter workouts with the team on spring break next week. So things are kind of winding down. We got a lot of good stuff from that. There's some position changes. We'll talk about all of that. But first, we're going to talk some recruiting with USCFootball.com recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez. Gerard, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. For a minute there, I thought Chris Carlisle's introduction was my introduction, and I was blushing, but I guess I'm not that important on the message board.
No, you're very important as well. They all love you, Gerard.
It's good to be. I'm leading off, and it's part two of our discussion of the target list. I was cut short. Last time we started talking about the 2010 target list. So I've been waiting here all week, anticipating, just ready to finish this off. I need closure.
You're right. Well, you know, we try not to cut you off too much, but we were going about 25 minutes last week. And we try to do three segments every show. There's no real time limit. It is a podcast, but I try to keep it around an hour, maybe as much as an hour and 15 minutes. The file sizes start to get a little big. We don't want to be too inconvenient for people that are downloading it to their computer. So we try to keep it in. There's not a set time, you know, there's not a set time limit or anything, but we just try to keep file sizes. So sorry we had to shorten it, Gerard, but we get to talk to you this week. So that's good.
Cool. Let's do it.
All right. And we're going to start off. We're going to talk about the target list that we talked about last week. Last week we did the 2010. This is the recruiting class of 2010 offensive target list. We talked about that last week. We're going to talk about the defensive target list this week. But first, we do have a question. And if any of you guys have questions out there, guys or gals, podcast@uscfootball.com is the email address. Drop us an email there. You can also post on the uscfootball.com message boards, but podcast will definitely get to us, podcast@uscfootball.com. We had a question, a recruiting question from Steve, and he wanted to know, he was talking about the offensive line recruiting, which we talked a little bit about last week. Back in 2008, USC signed five kids, but a couple of them aren't in there with Campbell and Meyer, so there's only really three. 2009, they went for three or four, only got two. In 2010, it looks like they're going to shoot for about four guys or so. It seems to be when you're recruiting the offensive line, a lot of the guys redshirt. It just takes a while to find out if the guys that you've signed and you get them on campus are actually players. There can be a bit of a revolving door. How do the coaches go through that? It's got to be tough, George, to evaluate these guys and figure out what kind of numbers you need to bring in on the offensive line.
No, it is difficult, and a lot of what's going on your team present day affects what you do with recruiting. I mean, last year, USC was really focused on three guys. I mean, that was kind of what they were comfortable with taking, and obviously they got Kevin Graff, his commitment really early, and they felt like, all right, you know, we got two guys to go, we'll be good. And I think it maybe changed a little bit at the last minute with news that Matt Meyer was never going to play football again with his foot injury. And I think that opened it up to maybe a fourth guy. And USC kind of later in the process came back on Stanley Hasiak from Hawaii. And they were, I think, willing to take four because they felt he was good enough to play there. But it does shift, and there is a little bit of leeway how you start the year recruiting offensive linemen and how you end the year. I think a general rule is always that when you're looking at linemen, you're looking at more defensive linemen than you are offensive linemen, because defensive linemen can always move over to the offense. They're athletic. If they're big enough, you have some areas that you can push guys in. Maybe like a guy like Derek Simmons, who we've seen actually move back and forth now. We learned this week from defensive line to offensive line back to defensive line. We've seen that with Alex Parsons. Even, you know, Butch Lewis, he started out fall camp playing defensive defensive tackle, and now is on the offensive line. So you always want to try to take a little more defensive lineman because they're a little athletic. If you get a guy that's an offensive lineman and doesn't work out, he kind of sits there. It's maybe dead weight a little bit on the roster. So that gives you a little leeway. But in general, yeah, you've got to look at these guys. You've got to evaluate linemen, I think, a little slower in the process. I think you have to wait. Let these guys develop physically. There's a lot of kids out there right now, 6'6", 320 pounds. There's a lot of baby fat in those kids. Those kids are not really in shape. USC tends to go for guys who are 300 pounds, sub 300 pounds, and want to bring them into the program and build them up. And I think that's the better way to do it. But you got to bring guys into camp. You got to look at them. You got to see what they can do physically. And honestly, I think through the years, and every team goes through it, you have injuries pop up with the offensive line. Ties or shoulders are no good. They have back problems, knee problems. That tends to be very significant on the offensive line. You see that happen more on the offensive line because these kids are so big at this young age. I think the size of their bodies just stresses them out a little more. So you've got to be very careful about that. And when you get to see them in person, you get to look at them, ask them some questions, and get a better review of who they are and kind of what injuries they've had, and see their knee bend and see their feet and things like that. I think that's very important for the offensive line. So in general, I think, yeah, it's a position that is always in flux. And if you really want to be sold and solid with guys, you got to see them in person first, and you really got to work them out.
All right, that makes sense, Gerard. And if you look at the current state of the offensive line, I mean, there was a ton of, I think it was the class of 2007, there was a whole bunch of guys from the defensive line that were recruited in the same year that all ended up on the offensive line.
Yeah, I think that was 2007, and that's kind of
Butch Lewis, and there's a whole bunch of guys from that group.
Alex Parsons, you get a feel for guys, you get to see him in certain situations around the defensive line, and sometimes you just watch a guy and he jumps out at you, and you go, wow, that guy would be really great playing guard, and that's something that USC does a really good job of in the camps, because you'll see Pat Rhule line offensive linemen up at different positions, and people who don't know better, you'll see a guy playing left tackle, and everybody will go, oh. Wow, you start getting reports from the camps. Oh, he's playing left tackle, so he must be a left tackler. He was playing center, so it must mean that USC likes him as a center. No, not necessarily. It just means they want to put him in a certain position so they can see certain weaknesses or certain strengths to his attributes. If you put a kid out there at left tackle, you're going to see him have to block in space, and you're going to see what his feet are like. You're going to see what kind of kickback he has. You're going to see if he's stiff. And that may be nothing. You may want him to actually be a guard, but you want to see him isolated in that spot and blocking with certain techniques, then you get a better, kind of project what he's going to look like when you move him inside. So that's another reason why camps are so important for linemen.
All right. And if anyone wants to come out this starting March 28th, USC football, they have spring practice. It's wide open. Pete Carroll encourages people to come out. We will, of course, be down there at every single practice, video, photos, interviews. We'll do podcast stuff from down there. We'll have a ton of information coming out of there. And you got to watch. You got to watch the linemen because there's so much stuff going on. People get moved around. You're going to see Jeff Byers play a lot of center because Chris O'Dowd's going to be out. So if you're a big USC football fan, this is a really exciting time coming up, spring football at the end of March. There's lots of stuff going on. And there'll be a lot of movement, I think, on the line. You get to play with some different people. And even a guy like Martin Coleman, who – he could have a huge impact where his first couple years, because he came out and he graduated from high school early, been hurt and stuff. You haven't really seen much of him, but boom, all of a sudden you could have a guy like that come out of nowhere who's been around the program, just haven't been able to contribute, and then be a big part of it all of a sudden.
The real incentive in coming down to spring ball?
What is it, Gerard?
To meet Dan Wojcicki.
Yes, you can meet Dan. We are going to talk to him. We didn't have him on last week, and we apologize for the Harvey Hyde fans out there. Harvey Hyde got really good reviews in our we got feedback from a lot of the people on the podcast. But he's in Las Vegas, and he wouldn't be coming back till late on Wednesday. We wanted to try and record this as early as possible on Wednesday because Wednesday's my girlfriend's birthday, so I have plans. So I couldn't really do too much. So we apologize. Coach Hyde will be back next week.
That's a poor excuse, but okay.
I know. Happy birthday, Jana. But everyone else, we do have Gerard, we have Dan, and of course we have Chris Carlisle. So I think you're going to have a really good show this week. And Gerard, let anyone know, I sent out about 25 T-shirts out this week, a whole bunch of people that sent in feedback. I tried to send T-shirts to just about everybody that sent in some feedback. So we sent a whole bunch of T-shirts, so there'll be some winforeveruscfootball.com shirts in the mail. Check your mail if you're a fan of the podcast, and you should see your shirt soon.
Are you asking me if I got one? Because I didn't.
No, no. You got one already, I think, bro. Come on.
Nope. I'm winning for just a certain amount of time. I'm evidently not winning forever. So.
All right. Okay, well, let's get to the 2010 defensive target list. This is a list that Gerard puts together, updates it about once a month, and it's color-coded. It's nice. You got the Rivals 100 guys in Cardinal, the Rivals 250 watch guys in gold, and everyone else, and you know who they're still evaluating. And he lists it, you know, what kind of interest in USC, if they have an offer and stuff like that. And you know, we went through all the offensive players last week. Let's start with some of those defensive linemen this week that could end up on the offensive line. Who knows? We could get moved around. Not too many offers out, Gerard. There's a couple of guys like Powell and Jeffcoat, you know, Ronald Powell and Jackson Jeffcoat. A couple guys like that have offers, but not too many yet on the defensive line.
No, and USC's got a pretty good defensive line right now. So they've recruited well, especially at defensive end the past few years. And the two big dogs, you know, out of the box are definitely Jackson Jeffcoat and Ronald Powell. Both those guys had offers last fall. Jackson Jeffcoat is the son of Jim Jeffcoat, who played for the Dallas Cowboys a number of years ago, is now actually an assistant coach at Houston University. And Jim Jeffcoat, you know, played with Ken Norton Jr. So there's a little bit of a Trojan tie there. USC coming hard after him. He's 6'5", about 230, 240. And at this point, kind of looks a little more like a strong side defensive end in a 4-3. He's a big kid, athletic, great lateral movement. He really uses his hands well. Technically, he's a very good defensive lineman. He really gets off of blocks well, sheds well, plays a little high sometimes, but I mean, he's an athlete and he can kind of get away with it at this point. And you know, that's going into Texas's home turf there in Plano, and it's going to be a battle. I mean, UT definitely wants him, and they've offered him, and they're trying to get him down for junior days and as many unofficial visits as possible. But he does want to take an unofficial visit to USC this spring. He'll probably show up either for a practice or maybe the spring game. So we'll have to see, you know, how things kind of go from there, because that's really the start-off point. I mean, at this point, it's all talk. And it's all, well, you know, I mean, USC's got a little bit of ties there with Ken Norton. Ken Norton is obviously a phenomenal recruiter everywhere. I mean, Texas and the city and everywhere he recruits. But it's difficult because, you know, you got Devon Kennard last year. You got James Boyd. You got a lot of good players at that position. So we're going to have to see how the depth chart, you know, stacks up with Jackson Jeffcoat. Ronald Powell's the local kid. Probably at this point, maybe the best athlete that we've seen in the 2010 class in California. He's just a monster. He could play tight end. He could play defensive end. He's very athletic. He's still a little raw, but to be honest with you, I mean, he's so productive at this point, even though he's raw, it's pretty hard to imagine, especially even playing receiver. We saw him at the football university camp a few weeks ago, and there was just no competition for him on the defensive line going against the offensive lineman. There was none. So he ended up actually volunteering to flip over and play a little receiver, and he did really well. I mean, a lot of the top players there singled him out as the top player and a guy that was just really hard to guard. I mean, 6'3", 240. He was a guy, I mean, we've known about him since he was a freshman. And, you know, early on he kind of looked like, well, maybe he's a guy that's going to maybe build into a three-technique defensive tackle. But he's matured, he's leaned out, he's really good-looking, really chilled out, just chiseled and kind of just has that look about a guy that, man, could come off a two-point stance and just catapult into the quarterback. That's the kind of guy he looks like right now. And he's got offers from everywhere. He's become a national recruit. And he became a national recruit basically when he started opening his actual letters. I mean, we walked into to Rancho Verde, the coach's offices there, and I was there with Jeremy Crabtree and Rick Kimbrell, our West Coast editor, and known Ron for a while. So we were palling around the locker room and kind of BSing, and I see this stack of letters on the file cabinet. And I asked Coach Pete Duffy, who's the head coach there, I said, hey, Duff, man, I mean, what's up with all these letters? Is this like Eric's? Are these your other kids, your seniors? I mean, is this all the letters for, like, this week? He said, no, those are Ron's letters. I said, Ron, what are you doing? Dude, you got a stack of letters? What is this, from, like, the whole year? And he's like, no, that's this week.
Oh,
and so,
wow.
I was like, dude, I was like, bro, sit down here for a second and go through these letters for me. I want to see who's sending you letters. So we go through it. He's got Alabama. He's got Notre Dame. He's got LSU. He's got none of these letters open. And Jeremy Crouch and I are laughing like, bro, you need to open some of these. He might be scholarship offers. You never know. And sure enough, as he started opening stuff up, he studies Arizona State. He's got scholarship offers there. So, you know, when he's bored in class, you know, here and there, sometimes he'll open some of these letters up. And then, you know, next thing you know, he's got a new offer. So it's funny. I mean, he's definitely a big-time recruit at this point, and everybody's going to be after him. And, you know, the same things with Jackson Jeffcoat as far as the hurdles that USC has to sign him. Those are there, too. He loves USC. We'll just see if the depth chart, and they got to make a plan for him and show him that, you know, he can get on the field and he's good enough to compete with anybody they've already signed. But those are definitely the two front runner guys. Cassius Marsh, now on the defensive side, as a tackle, is the only guy with an offer right now. He's at, Oaks Christian, which is the big time school up there in Westlake Village. They got a million Division I recruits, it seems like, every year for a very small school. He's got an offer. He liked USC a lot early and then went down for the junior day, and it seems like his mom was a little uneasy with where USC's located in terms of location and his surroundings. I mean, you come from Westlake Village, it's a little bit of a culture shock, you know, going down to USC. It's in the city, and I think that's been a little bit of an issue. He's looking at UCLA, he's looking at Cal at that point. He talked about that being his top three. He's also mentioned maybe Cal is actually a leader. It'll be interesting to see kind of how it plays out and how early he wants to decide. USC, I think, is a childhood favorite. I think he really wants to play at USC, but, you know, there are other circumstances and other things that he's going to have to look at that will factor in his decision. And, you know, if his family has influence at this point, it seems like they're kind of pushing him away from USC. He's got a scholarship offer on the defensive line. There are other prospects. There's, you know, always tons of prospects to talk about, but I think at this point, kind of narrowing it down, those are the guys that have the scholarship offers, and those are the guys that USC is already kind of going after hard.
All right, and then linebackers. Definitely there's not many offers out there. I think there's only one offer that I can see out there so far with linebackers. It was an interesting linebacker class for 2009. Obviously, two of the bigger names on the board did not end up signing with USC, and I think USC kind of expected to get those guys. What do you think is going on in this linebacker class?
USC's taking their time. They definitely want to get some numbers, but they want to get quality here. And this is it's an okay year for linebackers. I haven't seen many guys that really stack up with some of the best players last year. Still kind of looking for some of those guys that are that have that really special ability that you watch on film. At this point, a lot of people argue that Kyrie Fort, 6'2", 220-pound outside linebacker from Stamford, Connecticut, is actually the top guy in the class. And USC's already, you know, recruiting him and contacting him, and they've been talking a little bit, this possibility he gets an offer. But at this point, that's kind of like the guy that a lot of people are pushing. Haynes Pollard, who's a local kid from Crenshaw, is kind of the biggest name, at least, you know, in the Southern California area. The guy that's down in San Diego is the guy with all the offers, and that's Chula Vista's Tony Jefferson. Now, he's a little smaller, whereas Haynes is, you know, almost about, probably about 220, 225, about 6 foot. Tony Jefferson's 6 foot, and he's about 195. So he's a little more like a safety, but you know, USC went after hard. They love Frankie Telford, and they got Frankie Telford last year. Frankie Telford's about 5'11", 190. So playing that will position, there's a possibility a guy comes in, he's not really the biggest guy. He's just got to be a playmaker. He's got to be fast. He's got to be athletic, and those are the kind of guys you want to plug in at that spot. So, you know, Tony Jefferson is a guy that's phenomenal on tape. He's a hitting machine, and you even watch him on offense, and USC even and said to him, you know, you basically recruiting you as an athlete because we really like what you do at running back as well. So that's a guy who's just kind of all over the place with his ability and his versatility. He can kind of play anywhere. Some of the bigger names out of state that are getting some looks, Jeff Luke out of Port St. Lucie's, Florida, 6'1", about 230 pounds, more of an inside linebacker, phenomenal tape. He's claiming a USC offer. It seems like the offer's kind of in the works. We've been talking to his coaches, and his coaches are kind of hemming and hawing on whether he really has an offer yet. But USC's definitely recruiting him at this point. Jordan Hicks does have an offer, just got an offer last week. He's about 6'2", 210 outside linebacker from Westchester, Ohio. A lot of people feel like he's a lean early to Texas, and we'll kind of see how that goes. Talking to him, I think Ohio State's still definitely going to be a player a little bit for him, and you know, know, him staying close to home. But there's a possibility also that, you know, his family actually moves with him, you know, after high school. So there's some guys there, and it's been a slow process, but I think USC really wants to get the best guys, and they really got to evaluate these guys more to know, you know, who are the guys that are pretty good and who are the guys that are the SC-level guys, because the standard at USC's recruiting for linebacker over the past few years is very high.
No, certainly, you got to agree with that. And, yeah, I thought it would be interesting. I don't know if they were a little just, you know, snake bit or just a little gun-shy maybe after losing two of the bigger names from the 2009 class at linebacker. So maybe they're just holding off on some of those offers, I guess. Sounds like that's what they're doing.
Well, it's one of those things where, I mean, when you watch tape of guys like Vontaze Burfict and Manti Te'o, two of the best players last year was just a really good year for linebackers, and you're wanting to see those level guys. You're looking for that film of a guy that's just like, wow, that's the guy right there. That's the number one linebacker. And last year it seemed like, you know, there was tape coming out every couple of weeks of a guy that, you know, people were saying, oh, that's the best linebacker. No, that's the best linebacker. And there was argument. This year, it's argument, but for the other reason, there's just nobody who seems to be coming out and grabbing it that has that film that everybody just goes crazy over, that just, oh, man, the guy's a hitting machine, and he's got the legitimate size. That's the big thing. It's like there's a lot of kids that come out, and they're listed at 6'2", and then they end up being 6 foot. And that's another reason why you sometimes just got to see kids in person at the linebacker position, because USC, I mean, you got Ray Maluga, 6'2", 250 pounds. You got Brian Cushing, 6'3", 6'4", 240, 250 pounds. You got Clay Matthews, 6'3", 240 pounds. I mean, you know, by the time that Kaluka Maeda ended up graduating from USC, was 5'11", 235. These are big guys. You know, these are guys that you're used to seeing out there. Luther Brown, Chris Gallipo, these are guys who are all 6'2", going in that 6'3 range. So you want to continue to recruit that size, because that's what your scheme's been dependent on, you know, the past few years, and they've been really good defensively. So that's what you're looking for. And at this point, it seems like, wow, this guy, he's really fast, he's really athletic, but he's 6 foot, so it doesn't really fit the mold. Or this guy's 6'3", and he's 220, but he's slow. So you're trying to find that guy with the combination of both.
Makes sense. All right. And that's the last group, defensive backs. A couple of guys I've seen at the top of the list, Dietrich Riley, I've seen him at some of the camps. And he's also, you know, he's definitely gets a lot of attention out of La Cunada. And Sean Parker from Narbonne High School, I think he's up to 20-something offers already. So he's been getting a lot of attention in the recruiting world. But those are just a couple of the guys that are at the top of the list. I mean, just, I guess, overall for defensive backs, I mean, they had a good defensive back class in 2009. There's a lot of guys on the team already. What are they looking to sign in 2010?
It was a great year for defensive back in 2009, and we're going to have to see kind of how that plays out, I think, until we get a real understanding of what the numbers are going to be for this year's class. Dietrich Riley is a guy that they went on really early. He's been camping at USC since he was like 8 years old. And when we saw him, you could just see a little something, that glimmer in his eye, that competitiveness. Wasn't the most athletic guy, wasn't the biggest guy, but there was something about him that was like, you know, I get why he gets an offer. I see why Pete Carroll likes him. And then we see him fast forward, you know, almost a year there to the National Underclassmen Combine in San Antonio. And he's bigger, he's stronger, he just looks like a completely different player. He's developed. He's one of those guys that's really developed. And now you go, wow, he was one of the best defensive backs at the whole combine against a very good group of receivers, and really with a very good group of defensive backs. And he doesn't really play a lot of defensive back. He doesn't understand defensive back drills and backpedaling. I mean, he plays safety, he plays rover, but he doesn't really focus on it. He's really more of a running back at St. Francis High School in La Cunada, and that's kind of what he's known for. But he really, really came, I mean, he kind of like just, you know, made himself known there. He actually went over, started his drills at the running backs, did that for, you know, a couple reps, and then snuck over there to the defensive backs and actually called out Marquise Ambles. And Marquise Ambles had been just destroying people in the whole morning session, decided to come back for the afternoon session because he's just such a crazy competitive kid. And somehow, some way, he got Riley's attention, or Riley got his attention, and they went at it. And Riley held his own, more than held his own, against Marquise Ambles. He did a really good job, and that's when you see, wow, okay, the guy that we saw that had potential, that kid now, you see, he has more than potential. There's results, you know. And so he's a guy that's a safety. He's really high on USC. we'll see if, you know, UCLA or other Pac-10 school can kind of sway him, but it really seems like he's focused on SC right now. Sean Parker's a guy who's big-time safety, had 3 interceptions for touchdowns last year, and we got to see him at the Football University camp, also at the Coliseum a few weeks ago, and what we got to see at that camp is him play boundary corner, strong safety, free safety, and just like Byron Moore, his former teammate from Narbonne, he plays every position well. He could play anywhere, and that's going to be really valuable for him because it doesn't really matter what school he goes to. He could go to a school with the crappy depth chart and probably play right away, but he could go to a good school, a school like USC, a school like Florida, LSU. I don't even know how many. He's probably got offers from all of them. And he could probably find himself on the field because he knows those positions. He's not a real big safety. He's not, you know, T.J. McDonald, Taylor Mace type guy. He's only about 6 foot, maybe 195 pounds. Probably more like 5'11". And so he looks a little more like a corner, but, man, the guy can hit. You know, he's definitely got a little bit of that, you know, that little dynamo guy that comes in and just comes out of nowhere and just lights people up. I mean, he even took a piece of Ronald Powell a little bit in the non-contact drills at the Football University camp. So, I mean, he's an aggressive kid, and he really sees the field well, has great awareness, great technique. So he's a guy that's kind of that wild card guy that, like Byron Moore, you can kind of take and say, all right, you know, we're going to put you a nickel, we're going to put you a corner. Wherever you can get on the field and help us first, that's where we're going to put you, and he's going to be probably as good anywhere on the field. So those are guys that, you know, had some early offers. Just recently, Ronnie Vincent, who's a running back slash corner slash defensive back from New Orleans, got a scholarship offer, which was interesting because he got a scholarship offer before Trevon Reed, who's really thought of as being the best player in Louisiana this year. And with Vincent, he's a little more known for his defensive back skills, and I think that's probably why USC went on him first. And he's got some family out here. He's got an aunt in Santa Monica and stuff, so he's really excited about coming out here and checking it out. And he's really, you know, interested in USC, so we'll have to see how that kind of develops. But, you know, defensive back class this year, I mean, USC can afford to kind of pick and choose because they did get a great class last year.
All right. Well, Gerard, we really appreciate your time, and if anyone wants to see the full target list, they're up on uscfootball.com. They're off the front page at this point, but you can click on latest headlines more and you'll see them from about a week or so ago. But thank you very much for your time and sharing all the thoughts on the defensive guys for the class of 2010.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, everyone else, we'll have a really short break. 30 seconds, we'll be back with Dan Wyke. And, of course, later on the show, as promised, we're going to talk with strength and conditioning coach for USC, Chris Carlisle.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham. And as we promised, we have uscfootball.com beat writer Dan Wyke joining us in this segment. Dan, how you doing, man?
Good. I'm glad that you promise everybody that I'm going to be on. I appreciate that. That's nice. And then you deliver.
Yeah, promise.
Good guy.
Promise and deliver. And just so you know, I mean, we didn't get to talk to you last week, but we did get a lot of the feedback in, and there was a lot of positive feedback for Mr. Dan Wyke, so you should be proud of yourself.
I know a lot of people, and I have deep pockets, basically. That's how that plays out.
Very nice, very nice. And we sent out a bunch of T-shirts to everyone that sent in feedback. And you're always welcome to send us comments or questions. podcast@uscfootball.com is the email address. Well, Dan, we do have a few questions for you coming in. So I don't know if we've had – have we had questions for you before?
I think you've had questions for me.
Yeah.
I don't think that users have had I don't think I've answered any user questions quite yet.
Right, yeah, that's what I was talking about. So we do have a couple of those coming in, so we'll do that. But just to let people know, winter workouts is winding down, and we're going to talk to strength and conditioning coach Chris Carlisle in the next segment all about that. This is the eighth week of winter workouts this week currently, and then they have spring break and then another week off, I think, before, you know, they'll do some more workouts before heading into spring football. Yeah, Dan, did you see anything? It was an interesting players only practice yesterday on Tuesday. Did you see anything interesting? It looked like they're kind of ready to get spring break going already.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was fun. They're still moving around with, like, a good spring in their step, and there's still good intensity and good energy, and the team's having fun. But I thought the thing that was most interesting that we saw yesterday was the position changes are starting to take shape a little bit. You're starting to get kind of a feel for maybe what this defensive line could look like next year. And I think it was something that obviously is going to surprise a lot of people. Armand Armstead, a guy who looks like a tackle, I mean, recruited as a defensive tackle. I mean, looked like he was going to be maybe potentially the favorite to start at defensive tackle, is not going to play defensive tackle. He's going to play strong side defensive end. At least that's what it looks like. That's what he said. They're going to look at him there. And moving to defensive tackle then, I guess a guy who said it was his decision was Derek Simmons, is a guy who switched back. He said he was always a defensive player at heart. He's a guy now who's going to move back to the defensive side of the ball from the offensive line. So, I mean, those two moves are really interesting, kind of really shake things up and really kind of add, I think, more to the competition on the defensive line in the spring.
Yeah, we talked to Gerard Martinez in the last segment about it, and, you know, he mentioned the same thing with Derek Simmons. I mean, he's a guy that switched back and forth and back again. We've seen that a little bit, and sometimes a move in the spring doesn't always mean it's permanent. But, you know, talking to Armand yesterday, what did you feel like? Did he feel like something he wanted to do, or is it the coaches, or how did that work out?
You know, I mean, we talked, and he's saying the right things right now, like as far as, like, you know, two reporters. He's saying that, you know, it was the coach's decision, but, you know, he's cool with it. He thinks he can do it. He knows that if they have confidence in him, you know, that he's got confidence that he can do it. The feeling I got from talking to him, and this is just me being, you know, knowing people, I guess, is that, you know, I think he's excited. I think it's a chance to make more plays, and I think he's excited about that. And I think that he's up for the challenge to get out there and do something like that and to be on the edge. You know, things that, you know, we were talking after the interview, one of the interesting things that he said to me was that, you know, he can't remember getting outrun on a play. You know what I mean? That he's never been just left by a guy. And, you know, I would think, you know, with all the fast guys that he's had to practice against, you know, in his year on campus, that, you know, maybe C.J. Gable or Joe McKnight or, you know, any of those guys would maybe turn a corner and just leave him. But he said that, you know, he's always maybe, you know, it's maybe it's instinctually, maybe it's his athleticism. More than likely, he just takes really good angles on guys. And you know, and he feels like he can get out to the edge and he can stop a guy. You know, he can do that. He can get around a tackle and do that type of stuff. You know, obviously there are going to be questions about his technique. Like, that's going to be the biggest thing, I think, the biggest hurdle for him. But I have a feeling that, you know, there's a chance there for him to, if he succeeds, I think that's a chance for him to be kind of the big, you know, three down kind of defensive end, a guy that they can keep in. Or the other option is that he can be a first and second down guy in run situations at defensive end. And then you bring in a guy like Malik Jackson, you know, who's more of a pass rusher in passing situations. That's another option too.
All right. So it looks like there is a little bit of shakeup on the defensive line, but I guess the one constant is going to be Everson Griffin. You know, you did a story on him about kind of emerging as a leader. It looks like he's kind of, you know, he didn't let that fall by the wayside. He's still trying to be that leader out there on the defensive line.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think trying to is the right way to look at it. I mean, he still has some, he still has some demons, I think, that are going to kind of follow him. I mean, players know what kind of practice guy he was for much of last year, a kind of an inconsistent effort guy. And I say that with all respect to Everson. I mean, I think he's a tremendous athlete. But, I mean, even he'll admit that, you know, there were times when he didn't practice as hard as he needed to practice. He got maybe a little complacent. And I think that, I mean, if there's one thing that doesn't fly at USC, it's that. And, you know, I think that there are still guys that remember that stuff. And it's going to be harder for him to be a leader with that kind of reputation still, where guys are going to say, you know, if Everson points something out to somebody, maybe in the back of their mind, they're like,
you know, why, who does this guy think he is? Why? I mean, this is the same guy who a year ago, you know what I mean, wasn't maybe running hard between plays and stuff like that. What right does he have to tell me to hustle? You know what I mean? That's going to be kind of his challenge as a leader. And the only way that he can shake that is on the practice field. I mean, that's the only way he can get rid of that is by becoming a better practice player and stuff like that. And I think he's committed to that.
Yeah, it looks like he's starting to put his time in now and, you know, establish himself as a leader. But, you know, like you said, until spring ball starts and they see that he's working harder than any of, you know, his teammates on the defensive line, I think that's where you kind of earn the respect. We actually had we got a lot of good stuff from the players-only practice yesterday on Tuesday. The coaches had a little conditioning workout at 3. They have to leave the field, and the players take over. They did some 11-on-11s. They did 7-on-7s. They did a lot of 1-on-1s. We have video of all of that. We got some really interesting stuff. Stanley Avili grabbed the video camera. He shot a couple of shots for us. We have Aaron Korp and Garrett Green covering each other 1-on-1 as receiver and defensive back. So we got a lot of interesting video from that.
And the dark horse at quarterback, Brandon Carswell.
Yeah, Carswell, it was pretty funny. Him throw. He threw the ball pretty well, too. He put some nice – he had some nice touch on the ball. And also, you know, we got a lot of interesting video interviews with Michelle Phelan and Emily Nerland. They do a great job for us interviewing a lot of the players afterwards. We got Everson Griffin with the shirt off, and he's an impressive looking figure there on camera. You can check that out. And also, they were interviewing Alan Bradford, and Stephon Johnson came in and did a little guest interview. So check uscfootball.com. We got a lot of interesting video and some more stories and stuff coming up from yesterday's practice. It was a pretty fun one, Dan.
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, I like when the guys kind of get goofy and stuff like that. It makes it more fun for us. And it's the thing that I like best about coming to this team is that they can do that and it doesn't affect how they work. I mean, it's not like, you know, Stephon Johnson stepping out of reps to go interview, you know, AB on camera. Like, it's not like that. You know, it's as they're walking up the field and stuff like that, you know, I mean, those guys are they're gracious with their time. They kind of enjoy it, and, you know, they see it as an opportunity that, you know, they always like to make each other laugh and try to crack each other up during interviews. Like, you know, you mentioned Everson shirtless. You know, there were guys that noticed that, and they were kind of giving him a hard time about being on camera shirtless. And but, yeah, no, he does look huge. I mean, he's such an athlete. I think that's, like, to get back to kind of him from, and I think that's where some of the frustration comes from, is like you look at a guy like that and you hear the coaches talk about his athleticism and how special of an athlete he is, and you wonder, you know, is this the time where he puts it all together? I mean, you know, can this be the right time for him? So, I mean, you're hopeful, I guess, as a USC fan that Everson gets his kind of, I don't want to say his act together, because I don't think it's that big of a problem, but that he kind of puts everything, gets everything right, and starts living up to his potential, you know. A real interesting side note that I wanted to get to, per the defensive line, another interesting maybe reason for the switch, and this is just pure conjecture on my part, is that this also could open up the door for Avril Spicer at three technique. And what that would do is that would put another veteran on the defensive line when, you know, if they're looking for more experience up front. I mean, now all of a sudden you've got, you know, a defensive line potentially of Everson Griffin, Christian Tupou, Avril Spicer, and, you know, Armand Armstead potentially. And that's a lot different than a defensive line that's Everson Griffin, Christian Tupou, Armand Armstead, and Malik Jackson, just as far as experience goes. I mean, when you add a guy like Spicer into that mix, I mean, a guy who's been through battles and stuff like that, and another third random tangent on this, my mind all over the place right now, is that you know, is that Spicer knows Jethro Franklin and has worked with Jethro Franklin before, just like Derek Simmons, I believe, was recruited by Jethro Franklin. So I think that's, you know, another little interesting side note to all of this stuff.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason that you could say Simmons switched over, Franklin really did like him, and so, you know, now that he's back, I think he probably, you know, we didn't talk to him yet about it, but I'm sure he championed to get him back on Simmons back on the defensive line. So we will see, but it'll be interesting spring battles. We will be down there. Dan will be down there every practice. So will I. We'll be doing videos, a lot of interviews, lots of reporting from down in spring football. Nobody covers USC football like uscfootball.com. So if you like USC, you like football, spring football is like a season into itself. So check it out and definitely come down there. Pete Carroll welcomes fans to come down and watch. So check out our coverage. But, Dan, let's get to a couple of these questions here, if that's all right.
Okay, let's fire away.
Okay, so this this man is named Gadgets. That's an interesting name. But he wanted to know, he thinks the Trojans would have been stronger with Mark Sanchez and his experience coming back against teams like Ohio State and Notre Dame. I think that does make sense. He wondered if Pete Carroll's concern, if that was Pete Carroll's concern in not wanting him to go to the NFL.
I don't know if it's specific like that as much. I think the biggest concern with it was, I mean, obviously I do think he had Sanchez's interests in mind, and I truly believe that Pete Carroll did think he'd be a better quarterback if he stayed and started for another year in college. That being said, I mean, like, you know, USC had plenty to lose by Sanchez leaving, mostly because, I mean, they would have returned an offense with 10 starters, including a quarterback, who would have been a Heisman Trophy candidate. And, you know, and they do play that tough schedule. I think that there's something to be said for that. I think, though, the biggest concern was just, I mean, you don't want to have to indoctrinate a new quarterback again another spring. I mean, you know, they got relatively lucky, I guess, in the fact that the transition to Sanchez went so seamlessly, you know, that where they didn't have to worry as much. This is going to be a little bit of a different kind of quarterback battle because they don't have anybody who's got any real career starts at USC. I mean, Mitch Mustaine has starts, but I mean, that feels like an eternity ago when he was starting at Arkansas. I mean, so I think that's part of the concern too. And I think it's a good concern to have. I mean, it's a real concern, you know, when it comes into this offense. I mean, but one of the things that I've learned from talking to some of these players is that guys are super confident that the process is going to be made so much easier by the fact that they're returning everybody, essentially. You know what I mean? That it's not like you've got, you know, two new offensive linemen, you know, a pair of new receivers, and you're trying to break in a running back too. I mean, they've got everybody that they want back. I mean, essentially, other than Sanchez and Patrick Kenner, I mean, everybody else is back on offense.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, that's going to make that transition, I think, a lot easier for whoever's going to be the quarterback.
All right. That's cool. So hopefully, Gadgets, that answered your question. Then one last one from Kevin. This has to do with red shirts, and I think a lot of people, I don't know if they just play, like, the NCAA football game and you always want to, like, save people for red shirts and stuff, but Pete Carroll completely does not think that way. But he was saying that he feels that some USC fans feel that Stephon Johnson and Vidal Hazelton wasted their freshman year by barely playing when they could have redshirted. He wanted to know what recruits and players do you think are going to redshirt this season, and he specifically, like, guys like Drew McAllister, Patrick Hall, or DJ Shumate to save their eligibility since their respective positions are almost set on the depth chart. And, your boy's Drew McAllister. There's no way they're going to redshirt him. I mean, there's any chance of a guy's going to play, special teams, whatever, Pete Carroll will not redshirt. I mean, that's just not his philosophy. He's never been that way.
Dude, you're mowing my lawn and answering my question.
I'm sorry. I just, you know. Go ahead.
Do you like that expression? I love that expression.
Yeah.
So who are the guys? McAllister? No, he's not going to redshirt. I can't imagine them redshirting a sophomore unless he's hurt.
Yeah, and a Patrick Hall or DJ Shumate.
I mean, Patrick Hall, maybe. But again, like you said, I mean, if there's a chance for him to play, I feel like they don't operate like that. I think partly because, I mean, to harken back to the Sanchez example, I think part of the reason why Sanchez left was that he'd already been here 4 years, and you know, and he was ready to go. I mean, you know, so just because a guy has eligibility, there's no guarantee they're going to keep him all 5 years anyway. You know, so I mean, I think that if you can use him right away when he's here, and he can help make the team better, I think Pete Carroll's going to do that. I think there's no doubt in my mind. Now, I think maybe one of the higher profile guys who could maybe catch a red shirt would be Devon Kennard. I think as a guy who's potentially, because he's coming off a knee surgery, and you know, I think that is maybe something that could happen. I know that they're very hesitant to, you know, when it comes to out-of-state recruits, to redshirt anybody. They don't like to do that. They did it last year. They kind of broke their own rule with Bryce Butler, and, you know, it almost cost them. I mean, Bryce Butler said he gave serious consideration to transferring. You know, that he hated redshirting, that, you know, he didn't get a chance to, you know, I mean, it's disheartening, you know, and that's a tough adjustment when you're used to being like a stud freshman, you know, a stud high school player who, you know, I mean, the game plan centered around you and all that stuff. And then you go from that to, you know, barely to just working on the scout team, not seeing the field, not traveling and stuff like that. I mean, that can be tough on a kid. And that's why I think that they try to avoid that. But, you know, I think injuries, though, is always is always the biggest factor. You know, you got to see who's healthy before you make any redshirt decisions. I think if Pete Carroll could have it his way, I don't think he would redshirt anybody.
Yeah, I mean, his philosophy, his like a bird in the hand is worth like three or four in the bush, according to Pete. Like, if you can play, if you can contribute, there's no guarantee you're going to be here next year. I want you to play right now. And I think that's just the philosophy he goes by.
Yeah, no, and I mean, and I think that's a big part of the reason why he's able to go get a lot of recruits is that, I mean, things like that, that, you know, I mean, truly a football team, you know, you can use so many different guys in so many different ways. One of the interesting things is that I had a good chance when we sat down last week, or was that last week or 2 weeks ago, to talk to the coaches, and we talked to the new coaches, and we talked to special teams coordinator Brian Schneider. And we were talking about the guys that, you know, kind of the guys that he looks to kind of fill his special teams units, you know, and he doesn't have that mentality where, you know what, we're just going to take starters and we're just going to play starters. You know, he said that the core of your special teams is going to be your second team linebackers and your second team cornerbacks. Those are the guys that look to most to do that type of stuff. And then, you know, you fill it in with speed guys and stuff like that. Well, let's say Patrick Hall, for instance, okay, a guy who's just got great athleticism, you know, is a guy who can help them on special teams. They're gonna make that a point to sell him on special teams. You know what I mean? And to say, here's a chance where you can help us today. And you know what? As guys make contributions on special teams, coaches are more inclined to say, you know, maybe he's a guy we should give more of a serious look to, you know, at safety or whatever, wherever they end up using Patrick Hall, you know? So I think that that's how they sell special teams.
All right. So hopefully that answered your question, Kevin. I know a lot of fans do like to see players stockpiled, but that's just not the way Pete Carroll thinks. He, you know, he can go recruit another five-star guy the next year and he can just replace guys if he needs to. But Dan?
It's a great video game strategy, though. It is.
It is. I love doing that on the video game. I haven't played it for a while, but it was fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, I highly encourage that. You know, I mean, only if a guy's going to start. That's the only way I don't redshirt a guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dan, thanks for your time this segment. And we got an exciting one coming up. You might want to stick around and listen to Coach Carlisle's interview.
I would love to.
All right. Everyone else, we'll be back. Super quick break. We're going to hear from USC strength and conditioning coach Chris Carlisle.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, publisher of uscfootball.com. And yesterday, I got a chance to sit down with strength and conditioning coach Chris Carlisle in his office, talking about the winter workouts and what the team is doing heading into the spring. All right, we're here with Coach Carlisle and his luxurious office down here in the
spacious. Spacious. I like to say spacious.
That's
it's
cool.
It's more of a palace than an office, but nothing's better than this.
The bowels of Heritage Hall, and I thank you for joining us today. Appreciate the time.
There's no problem. Glad to be here. I really look forward to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, we have a bunch of questions from users today for the podcast, but just I guess in general, you guys are in the middle of winter workouts. Just kind of give us a
at the end of winter workouts.
Oh.
We've finished 8 weeks of work, or this is our eighth week, and then we go to spring break, and then we're going to come back. Coach Carroll pushed spring ball back a week because of the new coaches. He wanted to get everybody on the same page. So instead of starting on the Tuesday after spring ball, we're starting on Saturday the 28th of March. And so we're really coming to the end. We're rolling to the end. And we're really excited about spring ball. I think the kids are more excited right now about spring break. But spring ball comes in very close there.
How have they been going so far? How would you rate these compared to other
years? Things are great. The kids are working their tails off. We've had one missed workout the whole winter, and so we're that's 85 guys, and that's four times a week, and I've had one guy who missed a workout, and there was a legitimate reason, but our rules are you have two rules: you're early, and you communicate, and he didn't do either of those, and so he had to pay the price, which oddly enough, he hasn't, nor his friends have not missed another workout. So it sets a tone, and they understand what's right and wrong. So,
is there a severe punishment for missing one? Or
I don't like to use the term punishment. I like to, an attitude adjustment. Okay. It really helps. Usually, there's not repeat offenders. So, use your imagination. So, I have.
Yeah, I see those guys rolling on the field sometimes. Seems that doesn't seem like a lot of fun. I don't know.
No, that's the Bush League one. That's not ours. Okay. That's the coaches getting the guys to class. Ours is a little bit different. So it's top secret. It's the only thing I hold secret in this whole training. So I'll answer any questions you have.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to some of these. William Bentley wanted to know, how much is flexibility emphasized in the overall workout program, and what kind of techniques you use for that, like yoga or things like that?
Well, flexibility is a key, one of the keys. If we look at our total program, and William, I'm going to go ahead and expand upon this. If we look at our trainable attributes, the speed, agility, power, endurance, and strength, then if we put that into almost a globe situation, the things that hold it together, the poles of this, are flexibility and core strength. And so flexibility is one of the key parts that holds all of our movement together. So we use a dynamic movement type program that will allow our athletes to move better on the field. I would like to use yoga, but because of NCAA regulations, we're restricted on having anybody that is not part of the athletic staff run a yoga program just for our football players. They can take a yoga class through the university, but with the number of hours they have to stay eligible and everything, it just doesn't work really well. So the work we've done, we've got tremendous trainers and physical therapists that work with us. Russ Romano is our head trainer, one of the best trainers in the country. The physical therapist at the university here is John Meyer, and he works with Steve Reichel and a bunch of other doctors who've helped us to organize our plan of flexibility to help our athletes stay flexible and in better shape, because with flexibility comes strength and speed and all the dynamics that we want to have a better athlete come out of.
Probably injuries too helps with prevention.
Well, if we work with that, then you don't have to worry about injuries, but injuries occur. This is such a explosive, powerful game that if you ever hear anybody say, well, if you do this, you'll never have this kind of injury, you're always going to have injuries. Florida had five or six ACLs last year. We've had ankle injuries, and we've had a hamstring injuries, and we've had shoulder injuries. And you've looked around the universities around the country, they all seem to have a bunch of injuries, and for no other reason than it just stuff happens. And I said stuff because this is a podcast. I don't know who's listening to this. So it's one of those things that we've got to be aware of all the time. Our kids working on it constantly, and we do use outside sources to help us develop our program.
Cool. All right, next one up is from Guy. He wanted to know if you could expand on...
Is this my friend?
Guy, yeah, EF, yeah, yeah, Guy.
Hey, if Guy's listening now, you're my man. Guy is my guy. All right.
He's going to love that.
Yeah. I tell you about Guy. Guy was one of the guys when we first got here, 8.5 years ago, 9 years ago, whatever we've been here now, that was one of the first guys to come up and introduce himself and help me to understand what USC was all about. And he's just one of my favorites out there. I used to see him all the time, and I don't see him as much. But, if Guy's listening, then, hey, you're my boy. You're my boy, Guy.
He will definitely love that.
Great.
He just wanted to know if you could expand on your concept of finish. You guys have that finish on like shirts and stuff like that.
Sure. Finish is just a concept of don't allow anything not to play at your best. And so every drill we do, we have our athletes finish beyond what is a normal area. And if you watch our kids work, they play to the echo of the whistle. They don't play to the sound of the whistle. They play through the echo to the echo of the whistle. And so it's about finishing the season. It's about finishing each game. It's about finishing your workout. It's about finishing your classes. Everything in life is about finish. Those people who finish completely always have success. And so we want that part of it to be part of our program. Something that Coach Carroll brought in when we all came in together. And so we just expanded it out in a day-to-day atmosphere with our off-season through the winters and then through the summers. And then even in the season, we still work about finish.
Cool. All right. Oh, yeah. Guy, I'll definitely love that. long while. I'll try to shorten this up. Considering both your drive to compete and your unique conditioning style and program, what led you into conditioning as a vocation?
I tell you, I think my master's degree in history got me. No, I've been coaching 25 years. I've been at high school level, I've been at junior college level. And when I was working through the high school level, I knew I wanted to get to the college level. When I got to the junior college level, I found that football coaches actually spend less time with the athletes than I like doing. And so I found the avenue to be with athletes more and have more of a lasting effect, a long-term effect with them, was through strength conditioning coach. And so I started working that way back in 91, 92 at the University of Arkansas with John Stuckey. And then I went back into coaching, and then I had a chance to go back to the University of Tennessee with Coach Stuckey when he moved there in 98. And then when Coach Carroll called to bring me out here. And so really it's been where I want to be. I want to be in a Division I college. I want to be the best college in the country, and this is it. So that's how I kind of got into it. I wanted to be in college. Football was a vehicle I'd used to get into coaching, and then strength conditioning came out of that. So it's I don't know, it's something that I've always done. Back in high school, working with Coach Lanius, my offensive line coach, and there's my best buddy Keith Sims working out, and all of us out there all the way through high school and college, I've always been a weight room guy, and it just was part of my lifestyle. And so it was just, the way we could do things. And so it just was a natural progression for me.
Yeah, for those who don't know, you get to spend a lot more time with these kids than Coach Carroll does, right?
Sure. I mean, during January when they're out recruiting, I'm with the athletes. Of course, in January and February, they're up in meetings. We're still working with them. During the summer, the NCAA does not allow the coaches to have contact with the athletes anytime they're training. There's a lot of terminology that the NCAA uses, but they cannot come into contact in the weight room or out on the fields working. And so really I'm with them during that time. And so we've got to keep what Coach Carroll and his staff wants to be part of and wants them to understand and become part of their life. We've got to keep doing that all through the year.
All right. Next one is from Robert. He wanted to know, he had two questions. What age should kids begin a serious workout regimen? And then who are your all-time top three workout warriors you've seen in the program?
An age for kids to start lifting weights, I would say really to be serious in lifting weights, I would have to say into their junior, senior year of high school and not even doing max reps then. I've got a 9-year-old and he hasn't touched weight. We throw power balls around, different weighted power balls. We work with, running and movement skills, because that's the key. It's not about lifting weights. It's about teaching athletes and young kids how to move. And the weight room, it can come. What happens is if you start training young kids too soon, they have growth plates in the joints that will start to harden prematurely, which can lead to other problems in development with the athlete. And so really you want to stay away from, push-ups, sit-ups, and those kind of things. Core work and everything, med ball throws, running are all acceptable things. But I would stay away as long as I could from weightlifting. Okay. My favorite guys in the weight room, gosh, I've got so many. I don't have three. I have 103, I think. But, you have to go with Kenichi Adeze, who, BKU is a guy who came in at 350 and left here at 275 and 9% body fat. Sean Cody still comes in and works with us. Ryan Khalil was one of the best. Cedric Ellis is one of those guys that started, he was a tough kid to work with in the beginning, and he didn't really buy in, but all of a sudden he bought in and has really developed. And, there's guys like Taylor Mays on this team that are just a joy to be around. They just come to work every day, and it's just a lot of fun to be around them.
Yeah, you got Kenichi's jersey up there, signed jersey on the wall, so definitely he's a favorite. Yeah,
yeah, if they give me jerseys, I mention them. Troy Polamalu signed a picture for me, card. But, it's just one of those things. These guys, you know, you can, people say, "What's your favorite NFL team?" And you know, who am I watching? And it's all about the USC players. You know, I'm watching the Super Bowl, and you know, Troy. You know, I wanted him to win, and Deuce and Matt, I wanted them to win, and the Bengals are on, and there's Frosty, and there's Keith and Carson. You know, and then the Falcons. You know, with Big Sam and Ryan with Carolina. You know, it just, hey, whoever the Trojans are, I want them to win. Yeah. So.
You can hear that workout's going on behind us in the back.
Well, we are in the weight room, yeah.
So I apologize for that, but I'm sure you can hear us okay. Derek actually sent in a couple questions. One of the ones he wanted to know, and maybe this is Kenichi Udeze you just mentioned, is there any USC football player that surprised you with how much they've been able to change their body through hard work?
You know, Deuce Latuhi is probably the best story. You know, Deuce came in, he was like 398 when he came in. And the first, you know, when he'd come in from the junior college. And, you know, he was just a biscuit short of 400. And you know, and he probably had that after he left here. So to go from 398 down to 330 in 2 years was a tremendous change. And here you saw a young man that had bounced around through a couple junior colleges, played for us for 2 years, and then was a second-round draft choice by the Cardinals, and you know, was making his way and has done a tremendous job. And so Deuce was a heck of a change. You know, that was a great trend change. Matt Leinart coming in at 190 pounds out of high school and leaving at 240 pounds was a great change too. You know, he came in as a lamp post and left as a Heisman Trophy winner. So, you know, it was a great change around. And then there's, you know, the great kids like Troy and Reggie and those guys that came in. There were Keith Rivers. They developed, but you knew they were going to develop. They came in from day one and were ready to go in hard work. So.
Yeah, those aren't surprising guys when you see a Mays or a Rivers or something. They were huge when they got
in. Yeah, exactly.
One other from Derek. Are there any different movement exercises and focus for, say, wide receivers than there are for running backs or tight ends?
Sure. You know, there are basic movements, rope patterns like ropes and ladders and bags and stuff that we work on quite a bit. But when we start working specific modalities of training with offensive linemen and defensive linemen and wide receivers and defensive back, they all have different patterns they need to work on. And so we really start emphasizing that as we get into the summer. Right now is getting everybody back into their strength and the ability to move. And so they're going to be a little better than they were in the fall. But when we start the summer, that's where we start working on individual traits that they have to improve on. And I think that's one of the great things that Coach Carroll does is he draws such a clear picture. You know, it's three-dimensional. It's HD, and the picture he draws about what he wants this guy to be able to do. Here's what he lacks, and here's what he does. And so when you see me standing on the sidelines and I'm watching practice, I'm watching what kids can and can't do, and Coach Carroll and I will talk, or John Morton or Coach Rule or one of those guys will say, hey, you know, watch this guy. He's got a misstep here, or, you know, he has a problem getting out of this position. And so we'll start developing programs around teaching this guy how do you get better out of that position.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I'm impressed by a lot of stuff, but one of the things I was really impressed with is, like, the knowledge you have of each and every guy and what they have to do for reps and stuff. I mean, how do you keep track of 100 different guys like that?
That's not hard. I mean, that's all. The problem is I only know about 150 names. So if I forget people's names, it's because I got these guys. You work with them every day. This is no different than a person working on the computer or a person working in banking or whatever. They know 100 different accounts, and they know what everybody does. You know, I work with these kids, and I see these kids every day, that I see them move and they change direction, and I see them develop from when they're a freshman to the time, you know, through the NFL and everything. And so there's always little things you can improve upon. And so we're constantly working on these guys. And I think that's one of the great things about recruiting that Coach Carroll and the staff does, is they don't only bring in five-star athletes, they bring in five-star kids. Kids who want to get better, who want to develop and want and understand that for me to play at USC, I've got to get better. And in order to play at USC, that means I'm going to be the best in college. And if I'm the best in college, then I'm going to be one of the best in the NFL. And it's just that kind of development that they come in with such an open mind that they want to get better. And when that happens, then it's very easy to work with them.
Cool. All right, this one came from, he goes by, I think it's Sim Phoebe on the message boards. I don't know, these are usernames, Coach,
right,
now. So
I,
these were, yeah. He wanted to know if there's any stories of players who were kind of hard sells on the workout, but then they bought in and had great success.
Well, I tell you, you know, I think one of the best ones is, I mentioned already, is Cedric Ellis. Cedric wasn't going to buy in. And so we... we did some fun things with them, and you know, and got them going the right direction, and you know, all of a sudden, he began to become one of the guys we really counted on. And I asked him, it was going into, you know, during the senior year, we're standing on the sideline, we're winning a game, and I said, what was the difference? What was the change? He said, you know what? He said, I just got tired of being wrong all the time. I just wanted to go ahead, and I thought, hey, and he said, I just thought, screw it. And he didn't use those words, but, you know, he said, screw it. I'm just going to go ahead and show up. So he started showing up. He said, and all of a sudden, I started looking to me as a leader. And I liked it. And so he said, I kept showing up. And then I had to work harder and harder because everybody started working with me. And so Cedric was one of those guys that just was an amazing change from the time he was a freshman to the time he was a senior. That, you know, he's a great story and a great kid and a great worker. And he's going to do so well in life because he understood. He bought in. So that's one of them.
Was he one that kind of just reshaped his body? Because if you look at his dad, I mean, I think there's big genes in his family.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, they're big
yeah.
people. Yeah,
they're,
he
yeah,
was big.
I'll tell you what, he had the genetic. And don't get me wrong, you know, there's not many miracles. You know, there are two miracle physiological miracles. There's and oddly enough, is my best friend, a guy named Keith Sim, he's just a hoss. And then there's Cedric Ellis that just, you know, went from guys who just didn't to, they morphed into this development. We added dumbbells in the weight room. We used to go up to, I think it was 160-pound dumbbells. When we got here and Cedric was going into his senior year, we had to bump it out, and now we have 200-pound dumbbells. And so he was doing sets of five, alternating 30-degree dumbbell presses with 200-pound dumbbells. So that's the Cedric Ellis annex that we put onto the dumbbell rack. And that was of course, the ability to, he just bought in and has been incredible.
Does he have any records still that you guys keep? Or I don't know
well,
if you share that.
Yeah,
stuff.
You know, he's a 5'10 bencher, but, you know, I think one of the great stories of Cedric as a junior, and you really have to be here to see me recreate this because yeah. it's so dramatic. Okay, I was up for an Oscar on this one. Anyway, so Cedric, going into his junior year, hit 475, and he pushed it up pretty easy, and he got 510, and it took like 10 seconds to push it up, and he was struggling, and he got it up, yay! So we're getting ready to go into a senior year, and he was pressing 160-pound dumbbells, now he's doing 200-pound dumbbells. Okay. And so, I know he's stronger, okay? And so when he goes into getting ready for testing, 475, boop, boop, real quick, just two reps, just hit it like it was 135 pounds. I mean, he just bounced him off his chest. And he looked at me and said, Coach, what should I go to now? I said, I think you should go home right now. He goes, no, Coach, I think I can get, you know, like 530, 535. I said, I don't doubt it. I think you can. But what happens if we go ahead and tear a pec or sublux your shoulder? I mean, there's no job out there that's going to pay Cedric Ellis a $20 million signing bonus coming out. And so I didn't need to see him lift that much weight. I knew he could. And all I get up there on the wall is a piece of plastic that says Cedric Ellis, 535 pounds. Now there's one up there that says 510. But he could have done a lot more, but we didn't need to see it. Because as a junior, he was an All-American. He won the Maxwell Trophy, which was the best defensive lineman in the Pac-10. And so he goes to his senior year, again, wins the Maxwell Trophy. He's an All-American, first-round draft choice, and gets a check without ever touching 535. But we know it's there, but he didn't have to show it because we knew his resume of work from the work that he had done all year long. We knew how much he could do, but we didn't need to see it on a bar. So you know, that's one of those stories about Cedric that you know, is one of those I talk a lot about, in that our philosophy here is how to, how fast, how much. We really don't focus on how much. Stuff happens. My question when I get to a group is, how many 500-pound benches has USC had in the last 7 years? And, you know, 8, 12, 15, 1. It was Cedric Ellis all the way up to this year. And then Nick Howell hit 500 on his bench. All right? So, you know, it's kind of, if you're a 500-pound bencher, you're going to become a 500-pound bencher. And these guys developed into it because of their hard work. I'm not saying everybody else isn't, but it's not something we progress to. We don't spend enough time between reps and sets. We don't focus on the bench press. It's the last thing we do on Tuesday. It's the last thing we do on Friday after we've done all our jumping, all our flexibility, all our core work, all our power ball throws, all our squats and all this. Then we go to bench. It's almost like the ice cream at the end of a meal. You know, it's the last thing we worry about, but we put it out there because we know everybody will go through all the spaghetti and all the liver and all the cauliflower and all the stuff to get to that ice cream at the end. So, you know, they'll do all the work we need, and they'll get to bench at the end. And, you know, so it's at the end of a workout after we went Monday and Tuesday. And so benching to us isn't big. So the numbers that we get, they're not really important. It's the ability for an athlete to move. Technique is how to. How fast is the speed of movement, and how much is the amount of weight or the number of reps or number of sets you're going to do. And that's the last thing. If a guy's doing great technique with great speed, then we know that we can add it on. How much comes naturally? It's not something we force on our athletes.
All right. Well, the next question kind of has to do with
that's
the bench
press. That's kind of a
long one. Well, that's all right. Yeah.
You know, you asked me, can you expand on that? You know me, right? You better have two tape recorders here because I'm going to go. People are turning this thing off now.
No. They're going to definitely love this. This will be our most popular podcast ever. I'm guaranteed. A guy nicknamed In the Know. He wanted to know a small breakdown of your workouts, but there's so many things there. But he had a specific question of like, how much rest does each player get on the bench press?
You know, we're probably, let's put three people on the bench press, okay? So one guy goes, one guy spots, and the other guy has his book and he's looking for his next weight. So the guy number one finishes, guy number two comes in, gets on the bench, he does his reps, the guy that was spotting now is holding the book. So whatever a three-man rotation is, so it might be a minute, might be a minute and a half. The thing that we don't want to do, Our weight programs that we have, we can go an hour and 40 minutes because our kids have to get to class. So if we have the 6 a.m. group, we have kids that have to get to class at 8. So I can't go till 8 because they're going to be late for class. So I only go till 7:40 so they can go ahead and shower and get to class. About 45 minutes an hour of that is based in movement. On Monday, we do speed, we do our agility, we do our core, abdominal, low back area. And then we come in and do most of our Olympic stuff and our one-legged movements. And then we'll go out and run conditioning after that. On Tuesday, we come back. We do plyometrics, which is jumping. We do power ball throws, which are our medicine balls, which are rubber that bounce. They're cool things that Spark puts out.
Yeah.
We do core, and then we do come in, we do our squats, we do our bench, we do our bench auxiliary work, our triceps and our shoulders. We do back and bicep on Monday. And then we, if we have any running to do, it'll be quick. But most of that is on Tuesday is spent doing skills, hand fighting with our defensive line and our wide receivers, eye-hand coordination stuff we do with all our skilled athletes. You know, so we're working on specialty items on those kind of days. Then we take Wednesday off, and we come back on Thursday. We work a different kind of speed, a different agility, and core again. We actually have four different core programs, two different speed, an upright speed and a quick burst speed, a change of direction speed. Agilities, we have 17 different kinds of agilities. Core, like I said, we had four programs of that. On Monday we'll do jerks, and on Thursday we'll do snatch. On Monday we'll do hang cleans on Thursday. So you're doing a lot of stuff. But our turnover is very quick because we only have about 30 minutes to get all our work in the weight room done. And it's about an hour workout. But because we don't spend a lot of time between reps, we don't get the maximal numbers that everybody's looking at. How many 500-pound benchers do you have? We got one, okay? Yeah. And so it's not an important thing. A lot of teams we played, some of the bigger teams, they've had 9, 10, 12, and we've been okay. We've not physically been beaten. It comes to a situation that we believe that if we move better than our opponent and get them in bad situations because of our speed and our ability to move, that we're going to win more games. And so it's not something we focus on.
Seems to work so far, yeah. Okay, well, I know we got to let you get out there. We got one last one, if that's okay. It's Kazox, I think. I don't know how you pronounce his name. All right. Is there a player that's made the biggest strides from the end of the season to now regards to speed, strength, physique, stuff like that?
Well, I promise you, the guy that has really changed around, you're going to see it, is Anthony McCoy this year. Anthony came out of high school. He's a 260-pound wide receiver. In between the first and second practice, he moved from wide receiver to tight end. Okay, and he was just a soft body. He was a 20% body fat kind of guy, and now he's down to like 11% body fat. He's still 260 pounds. You know, he's running 4.5s in the 40s. I think he went 36, 37 inches on a vertical jump. He went over 10 foot on a standing long jump. The guy is just really just focused in and has done, you know, from the time he was a freshman to the time he is now, he's really made the most dramatic change physically and mentally and emotionally. The kid has just really bought in and really has changed. And so, you know, that's what we're talking about with those five-star kids, that, you know, they bring in kids that really want to change. And sometimes it takes, you know, some kids it takes a month to change. Some kids, their bodies just have to develop into that position, and it takes a couple of years. And he's an example of a guy who's taken a couple of years, though he had a good year last year. Red Ellison, another tight end, is right up there as kind of a worker and a kid who's really developed into it. I probably do 25 kids right now that really have made dramatic changes of where they were and where they're at now.
Well, Coach, appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
No problem. Hey, I appreciate you guys. And keep sending questions to Ryan. And any chances we got, we'll answer questions. And I'm glad to do it to help you understand what I'm doing here and help you understand what the kids go through during the year. Anyway, I appreciate you guys. Fight on now.
All right. Thank you.
That's our podcast for this week. I want to thank Gerard Martinez, Dan Wyke, and, of course, Chris Carlisle for joining us in the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with another exciting edition of the Peristyle Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.